Hi, I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with eight kids between us from preschool to teen.
This is the show where we help you feel better about the mom you are and share our own parenting tips and personal stories.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 112 of the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers here, as always, with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah.
It is Megan's birthday this week, you guys. We have to acknowledge that.
Of course.
Is it a big
one? It's a big one. I'm going to be 40.
Nice. Yay. Well, happy birthday.
I'm actually
birthday.
Looking forward to it. Yeah. I'm not a scared of this number.
You're so. Not a scared.
No. And I'm really excited because I get to see you and hang out with you.
I'm coming in for the birthday weekend. So that's exciting. What are we talking about today? Today we're talking about board games, playing games as a family, playing games with your kids. How to survive and even enjoy.
How to actually enjoy it. I know. If you have really little kids, that could seem very unlikely that this would be an enjoyable thing for you. But I promise it really can be.
It really can. And it's one of those things, I think, when you're newer to motherhood, you look forward to, like, oh, we're sitting around the family table playing games. And the first or second or third time you try it, you're like, oh, that didn't go so well.
Right.
You know, a kid is upset about losing or not following the rules. So we're going to get into all of that. But we also have a sponsor today.
We do. We do. And I am excited about this one because I've been wanting to use this product forever. And I've seen them come up in my Facebook with the really cool eyeglass frames. It's Warby Parker. And what's really appealing about Warby Parker is it kind of eliminates the need to go try on glasses frames at the optometrist, which I hate doing that because I feel like it never looks the way it will out in the real world. It's like there's all these glasses and you're just trying them on and looking in the little mirror and, you know, maybe you have a friend with you, but they start to lose track of which pair was which and it's very overwhelming.
And it's like smelling perfumes or something.
Yeah.
They all start to smell the same.
And then I always end up like finally just picking one and leaving and I never like them when I get them home. So this is really cool because you do a free home try on. So you get to order 5 pair of glasses and they send them to you. You know, there's not prescription in them. They're just blank lenses.
Right.
And you just try them on. You have 5 days to do that and you can wear them around the house. You can go out. You can ask your friends what they think. I tried them on in my brother's house, like in his backyard. I was walking all around in different rooms and asking different people what they thought. And then when you decide which one you like the best, you have no obligation. You don't have to buy any of them.
Okay.
But you can just ship the whole thing back for free. It includes like a prepaid return label. And then you go to warbyparker.com/themomhour, all lowercase. And what you're going to do then is order your glasses, and they start at $95.
Oh, that's
so
really affordable.
Yeah, and that's for prescription lenses with the anti-glare and anti-scratch coating. So that's awesome because
I love that.
Like it's an unheard of price.
Yeah, you're so right. It's such a different experience to be able to sort of try them on with your different outfits and like the way you normally look in your home and the lighting that you're used to. That makes such
a
difference too. So I love that. 5 pairs for a home try-on kit. It's at warbyparker.com/themomhour, all lowercase. They're
all
just
lowercase.
A really cool company. For every pair you buy, a pair is distributed to someone in need, which we love.
Which is awesome.
And
you can keep track of your prescription information on their app as well. But before you do that, just make sure you go to warbyparker.com/themomhour to get that free home try-on kit. There's really no risk, so why not, right?
Yeah, why not? And we have a cute picture of you trying on the frames that you picked, so we'll put that in the show.
Oh, yeah, the Wilkie. They've got kind of like a cool like fade, like blue to brown. They're cool.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
We'll throw that in the show notes. Well, thanks, Warby Parker. And again, if you forget that URL, we'll link to it in our show notes as well, which are always at themomhour.com. Okay, let's talk gaming. Family game night.
Okay.
Here we go. So actually, I've been wanting to do this topic for a while because my family is actually entering into this phase where board games are tolerable. My youngest is 4.5 and finally can kind of keep up a little bit. And we're going to get into some of that about including younger kids. We're going to actually get into that in some detail. But what's awesome, I think, Megan, is I remembered that you had written a post. So for brand new listeners, if you don't know, Megan had a very popular blog called The Happiest Mom, which was rebranded into The Happiest Home. And I came on as her editor and contributor. This is several years ago, and we wrote together there. So when we bring up old blog posts, that's what we're talking about. We no longer have an active blog in that way. But Megan, I remembered that you had written a post about 7 ways to survive playing board games with your kids. And of course, I knew it was older, and I pulled it up, and it's more than 5 years old. old, which means you're youngest.
I was just looking at this and it's like, my youngest was three.
Yeah. So Clara was three. And so, and my youngest is 4 and a half. But you were kind of in the phase where I am now, which is everybody's of game playing age, but there are still some modifications needed to have everyone enjoying the same games. Plus you have five kids. I mean, that's a big table, and there's a lot of, you know, considerations to include everybody in playing board games. So I looked up this post and it kind of warmed my heart, because so many of the things you talk about are like so pertinent to my life right now. And even a lot of them are the tips I was going to offer in this podcast to our listeners. So it's like full circle.
Another thing I was realizing about where you are right now and what I didn't realize about where I was at that time is that it's not only tough because you have little kids, but it's tough because when they're all like little like that, they all want to play all at the same time.
Yes.
That's something that's changed a lot for me. Like, my youngest now really doesn't care if she gets to play when everyone else does the way she did when she was three.
Because she has other things that can keep her busy. Yes.
And she understands that she can be patient and wait for her turn and all that stuff too.
Yes, it does. It changes so much. So, all right. So I thought for the first kind of half of this episode, I'm going to use this blog post as a jumping off point and talk about your 7 tips to survive playing board games with your kids. And I would even say enjoy playing board games with your kids. But it does feel like survival. So I'll kind of lead us through. We will link to this post in the show notes for this episode, which will always be at themomhour.com. And this is episode 112. So if you want to read it or share it with your friends or revisit some of these tips, we will link to that. So tip number one is don't underestimate your kids. And what you meant by that is there are board games meant for the preschool set, and there are also junior editions of classic board games. But what you said is your 4-year-old may be able to handle a game of Sorry or Yahtzee, especially if you make some accommodations. So let's talk about this.
Yeah,
I agree. I think games marketed to preschoolers, with a few exceptions, I'm sure we can think of some that we do like, but with a few exceptions, I think a lot of those games are not very well designed.
And I agree.
They're not enjoyable for people who are not 3 and 4 years old. And I think getting clever with the accommodations we make to more classic games, is such a better way to go. So let's talk about some of those accommodations. Maybe you remember some from your family, or I can chime in.
Yeah, no, I do. I'm having to rack my brain a little bit. But I like you. I don't love the junior versions of games. I hate Candyland with like a white hot passion. I'm okay with memory. But there's a reason why those ones are big. And then I think, like you're saying, like some of the ones that are sort of like an offshoot,
right,
of a more grown-up game.
Yeah.
They're just not fun.
They're not
often
fun.
Just kind of boring. So what we ended up doing instead was we would just change rules, or we would allow the youngest to have a different rule. So like sometimes, you know, like I remember when I was a kid, and I mentioned this in a later tip, but I would play, my parents let me play Boggle, but they allowed me to break the rules and play 2-letter words.
Yes.
So, you know, or you can set a timer and only play for 15 minutes. And when 15 minutes is up, it's up, and like the game is over, and wherever you are at, you can play games where there's no winner. I mean, we did that a lot too when my kids were really little. There's a lot of ways to take a game and make it work. Sometimes everyone's playing with different rules, and that's okay. It's like, it's your board game. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yes, I agree. And I think so. A lot of things that make preschool games preschooly is that you don't have to read. So that's understandable because preschoolers can't read.
Right.
But if you can get around, if you can find games that work without needing to read, or if you can team up, like team a little kid up with a big kid who can read, or make allowances that we've played sometimes where the youngest can play with an open hand, like she can show her cards and we will help her make decisions, but she still gets to have her own turn. So if it's Uno, or if it's, you know, something like that, she can play with her cards open so we can help her make choices, but she still gets her own cards and gets to play her own turns. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that you brought up Boggle, because I love Boggle, and I, as like an adult, I love Boggle, and I kind of forgot about it for a while, and we got it out maybe 6 months ago, and we took your 2-letter word idea to the next level, where Brian and I will have 4-letter words and up. The older two kids will have 3-letter words and up, or maybe I've even told them they can use 2-letter words as well. And Violet, who's just learning her letters, all she has to do is write down letters she recognizes, because she's 4, so she's recognizing letters, you know, and she really feels like she's playing. I will say for her, she's been very sensitive to feeling. She does not like to feel like the youngest. That's like a driving force for her. So we've had to be really careful with accommodations,
not
because
to make it obvious.
Not to make it obvious, or to make it still feel fun for her. If she just feels like we're babying her, she's not going to buy it, because she wants to be a big kid. So, I love this. So yeah, so the general tip is, don't underestimate your kids. And I think we would add to that, you know, get creative with your modifications. It doesn't have to mean you buy the games that are just geared toward preschoolers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Love it.
Yeah. So I think I feel like I kind of already answered some of the stuff in number two, tip number two, but that's okay, because there are other things to be said. And I'm curious how you do this too. So my second tip was to create house rules. And that was, you know, the Boggle thing was one of them. When I was young, that was how we did it. You know, we were allowed to play two letter words if we were under a certain age. Another house rule that we've had with, like, there are games, I'm trying to think if there's like any that come to mind, where there's the ability to like steal or like, you know, screw over someone else.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Uno draw four. Draw four and
Sometimes we'll suspend that. Not always. It's not like you can never play that way, but it's like only if you're playing with your older siblings and it's like a contentious game and that's fun. If it's not going to be fun for the whole family to be able to like literally make someone lose rather than not winning. There's a big difference between not winning and being made to lose. And I think that there's a mean-spirited about that.
Yes.
Mean-spiritedness that can come out sometimes. And it's not fun with little kids.
Like, it isn't.
They're not going to win anyway.
They're
like already frustrated.
Yeah. And I think we're going to get in detail about how it's hard for little kids not to win and whether we let them win. So I'll save that. Right. But I will just say that, the first one that came to mind is in Uno, how you can make someone draw four. And sometimes you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think it can feel, it's worse than losing. It's like having someone pick on you. And I have one child in particular who's so sensitive to that. And it just makes it not fun.
Yeah. So we've suspended rules like that. And we've also made different point systems. We play Catan a lot. And now we play all the way to 10 points. But we used to make it, we would only play to like tops 7, sometimes 5.
Right.
And even to make that work with the game, you have to change other rules, because otherwise, it's like you get there in like a minute. So you have to kind of toy with that sometimes. And I guess, again, it goes back to the main point that this is your game. This is your family.
Yeah.
You can play this game however you want. You can change it from game to game, or like from time you play to time you play, to find the way that works for you.
I want to give a shout out to actually game designers and game instructions writers, because I feel like this has gotten a little better. Just recently, we've played a few games where I've actually had to read the instructions. We started playing Catan. I was inspired by you. And we were playing Risk over Vacation, which is not my favorite. But it seems like there are more modifications that are actually offered in the instructions. So if you have a game you feel like is too complicated, check the instructions, or even like Google it. I feel like if you're not feeling like you could come up with a creative modification on your own, I'm finding that the games themselves, like both Catan and Risk, have like a beginner version. Like, here's how you set up your board. And here are some simpler rules. So I don't know. That could be, that could start to be a thing. We have an edition of Sorry, a newer edition of Sorry, that has some newfangled things that you do, different rules than the Sorry I grew up with, but they do offer a couple different ways to do it. Another modification that I know you don't like Candyland, but that bumped into my mind that I know you can do with Candyland is remove the picture cards. Or sometimes we play where sometimes you get all the way through the deck and nobody has reached the finish line yet. And so then we will remove the picture cards for the second time through the cards. Does that make sense? So that people aren't getting sent way back. You can also play with Candyland that the picture cards can only send you forward if you don't get one. Because you know the kid that's always disappointed when they draw like the gingerbread man and it sends them all the way backwards. So just make those modifications. I love what you said about house rules, because there's something that feels like this is how we do it in our family. And it's more of like a guiding principle that you start with, instead of we're halfway through this game, everyone's melting down, so we're going to change the rules right now. That can, I think, for some kids, that feels unfair. Or even as adults, it could feel like we're cheating or being unfair. But I like if you start with this, start before you play the game, or just in general, here's how we do it in our family. Then it's less like, a couple of house rules we have. One is that the winner cleans up. And this is from when I was growing up. And it's just kind of a silly thing. Most of the time, we all help clean up anyway. But I will say it has gotten us out of some major disappointment about losing to be like, well, at least I don't have to clean up. So it's almost like it's winner cleans up like loser does not have to clean up. At least you don't have to clean up.
Right.
And so, you know, we kind of laugh about it. And usually it's like, haha, you have to do the big cleanup. And then we all end up helping anyway. But that was even from when I was a kid. Yeah, create your house rules, make the modifications. Okay, so here we go. Yeah, next tip, number three is fake it. And I'll just read what you wrote. So your toddler's probably not going to figure out the point of Monopoly unless she's a genius. Our three-year-old Clara, who's now eight, plays board games with us in that she gets to roll the dice, move a pawn, and arrange cast-off cards. Of course, she's not really playing, but she gets to spend time with us as part of the group and is free to get down and play if she gets restless. Okay, and so here's where I'm just going to come right out and say this never worked for Violet. She was never...
See that.
It's just her strong-willed personality. She was not fooled, and she didn't want to like play with her own deck of cards right next to us. Or, and I had other friends recommend the same thing, and I was like, she's just not buying it. But now she's finally able. So if you have a kid like that, you're not alone. But I do think this works for a lot of kids. So the equivalent would be you give them their own hand. They get to hold their own hand. They get to roll the dice. And then the rest of the group just kind of plays.
Moves along.
I think
I will also say that for that, it works to a certain point, even to let them play knowing they're not going to really win or even understand the game can work until they want to ditch. That's when sometimes it gets, you know, it like, because they've been playing and they've been holding the space and like suddenly they're like, I want down. And that's so, you know, like having her completely out of the actual play of the game was easier.
Yes.
I can see why that totally wouldn't work with Violet.
No. And once she got mad, she could take down she could flip a board game like a angry drunk Irishman. I don't know. Like she would just wreck the whole thing when she got mad. It was bad for a few years. But I do think this works. I think this is a good tip, just maybe not for the very strong will.
Maybe not for Violet. Maybe Violet is the exception to several rules.
A special case.
You should just get her a t-shirt that says special case.
Yeah, I'm special. This is a good time to mention, because I'm afraid I'm going to forget it, the playing card holders. I've mentioned them one time on this show before, but if little ones who have trouble holding a whole hand of cards, especially a big hand like Uno or something, they're just plastic. You can get them on Amazon. I've seen different ones. I have to say, I think ours are the best. First of all, ours, you don't have to hold the playing card holder in your hand. I've seen some where it's like you hold this little wand and your cards are
like
tucked into it.
Your hands or something?
Yeah, well, you hold it like a handle. But then if you put it down, you still have to then put it down and pick it up. Ours is like, it stands on its own and it's sort of curved like in a concave shape, like you would curve a hand of cards so that nobody can see them. And then the cards just tuck right into them, and even really little kids can use them. So that's kind of a random place to mention that, except I just didn't want to forget. And I will link to that in the show notes. It's $10 for two of them, and we've used them for years. And I've seen others, and this is, I really think, a really good version of that idea. So
cool. So number four, set a timer. So I said like over the years, I've realized just because my kids are bugging me to play a game, that doesn't mean they care if we finish it. So recently when we had a limited amount of time, I would set a timer or put a restriction on the game. And I mentioned earlier that we would only play like in Catan, only play to 5 or 7 points.
Right.
But sometimes also setting a timer, just knowing I only have like to invest 20 or 30 minutes in a game makes it that much easier to actually fit it in. And sometimes if the kids were really disappointed about being done, and I'm done in air quotes at the 20 or 30 minute mark, we might leave the game sitting out with the idea that we come back and finish it later, but often no one cared. We get to the end and it's like, do we really need to keep this game going? And the only person who wants to keep it going is the person who's winning.
Yeah, so true.
You know, I mean, nobody else wants that game to keep going. So most of the time the vote would be, let's put it away and try again later. So it always worked for me, and sometimes still does.
I have a lot to say about this, because I really do not like long board games myself. Right. I don't, they just make me feel trapped and claustrophobic, and I want to escape. And Reed will, he can sniff out the longest, most complicated board game in like a house. We'll go on vacation or we'll be at somebody else's house, and he will find like the game that requires 6 players and 6 hours and is so complicated. And so this has been a point of tension in our house for several years. I'm really glad you brought up the stepping away and stepping back. That's actually been a better solution for us, probably because my kids are still a little bit younger. So I will say, I will play that game with you, but you have to set it up, first of all, because like getting out a million pieces and reading the instructions, and you set it up. I will come to the table when you're ready, and we need the ability to play for 15 minutes and then step away and come back to it later, because I just can't and I won't. One tip there is to set up a game like that somewhere where it doesn't have to be cleaned up. So if you have a side table somewhere or somewhere where you can revisit it. And then, like you said, it's going to stay out for 6 weeks. But, given enough time, either the kid will lose interest or maybe you will actually finish it. But I have to break those up into manageable chunks because I just don't enjoy them. I really don't enjoy epic.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So I have those times where I can play an epic long board game and it's fun. Like the holidays, I feel like I can do that because I've already put everything else on hold and this is like holiday time.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. If it's just like a random evening at home, I won't even sit down at the table if it's going to be 2 hours before I can get up. So definitely the timer thing has really helped.
And I think that would be good. And I think I might actually try that one next time instead of just say, no, I'm not going to play that with you.
Right.
All right.
No way.
No. There are games I just say no. I won't play. Okay. Tip number 5 is team up. So we kind of touched on this before, but teaming up a younger and an older, I think that is a good strategy for so many reasons. I mentioned one, which is any game where you have to be able to read. If you have an emerging reader or a kid who can't read yet, any of those, then pairing them up. And also kids who are sensitive about losing, which is a lot of kids. So then it just sort of puts them on a team where they can, I don't know, live or die with the team, like win or lose with a team. Yeah. It seems less isolating than losing on your own, especially if you're sensitive about being the youngest or always losing or whatever. So did this play out with your multiple kids, multiple ages with pairing up?
Yes, it did. Well, and I will say it worked particularly well when there was like uncles, aunts, cousins and stuff involved. We would usually give the younger kids the choice of who they would pair up with.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
And if you were like an older kid, you kind of had to take it. Like if your little, 4-year-old sibling wants to partner up with you and you're 10, I feel like you're mature enough to say and not be like, but I want to play on my own. I mean, you'll have another chance to play on your own. That's
right.
This is just not that chance. This is a family thing. And this is, this is what we need to do to make this game work. And I will say my kids have, for the most part, all been great about that.
I love giving the youngest
more fun when. Giving them a choice. Because like you were saying with Violet, they don't feel like they're being cut out. Or just being like kind of an add-on,
right?
And everyone's just humoring them. They get to choose, and I just think that makes them. And then the sibling that they choose usually is a little flattered by it.
Yeah.
So it's or the aunt or the uncle or cousin. So that's worked really, really well for us. And they, depending on how old they are or their ability level, they might get to almost. I mean, like when Owen was 6, he was really good at strategy games. He just needed help being reined in. So his problem was he would just have these wild moves, and he'd be like. Like he didn't need a partner, but the game always went better for him when he had a partner because he could use his strategy mind without like going totally off the rails, buying up all this property that doesn't go together or whatever. And it was, so it just worked out better that way. And
we
would still do that with Clara on certain games.
I was just going to say, it doesn't have to be just the little tiny ones, but there's so many benefits to teaming up, and you have a big family with lots of cousins. So I can see how some games you'd have to team up because they're not 12 person games. but I was just thinking about Reed, like you said about Owen, he's also has a very, very strategic mind and he's very bright. His issue is more managing his emotions with like the highs and lows of getting frustrated, winning, losing. And I can see how in the same way that Owen was moderated strategically, Reed would be moderated emotionally by having somebody to be like, it's okay, we'll get him next time or whatever. And not feeling like he's on an island. So I love that.
Feeling like you're part of something.
For
sure. Especially if it's like a favorite sibling or cousin. And another thing I will say is about Owen is, I mean, he now is pretty good about managing his emotions, but when he was 7, we called him Rage Quitter because he was the king of the rage quit. Because he would just be like, no, and then he'd be done, and then he'd, skulk off, and then the game's ruined, because no one wants anyone to be unhappy,
It's
fun if it's, like, good-natured ribbing, but if someone's that angry,
actually
literally take their pieces and leave.
Reed is not the rage quitter, he's the rage repeat player. So his rage is he always wants to do it over because it's like he's convinced that time he'll win. So it's like he's like an addict that way. He's like, next time will be better. So he's like the rage repeater. That's so funny. Funny. Very common. Okay, I love your tip number 6. I will set it up, but so smart. Okay. And this is keep games in plain sight. So basically you say have a select few games that are easy to access and they're out, and so that you don't have to go rifling through a big bin or closet through like 25 games that most of them are not something anybody wants to play. So this is like the same, right, the same concept as rotating your toys and having fewer things out, but having them organized and easily accessible. It's just so smart.
Yeah, I mean, I found that like at first I had these games and I had games still left over from when I was younger that I had carried it around with me throughout my adulthood. And then I had then the ones we bought on top of that, and they were all in one closet. I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Like every time we want to play a board game, first of all, there's too many choices.
Right.
So instead we would narrow it down. And I found that in our family, we kind of get in these, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, like a jag, where we'll play the same game over and over and over for a month. And then we move on to a different game. Right. And that's fine. Like that's great. Actually, I think it's kind of fun. And it makes it that much more likely we'll actually do it.
Yep.
Because that game tends to be sitting out on the table or the buffet. It's just easier to access.
Yeah. And it's like, it's kind of like when your kids want to watch a movie and you open, like, well, it used to be like the DVD case, or now maybe it's your streaming service. But when there's so many choices and you have multiple kids, the decision making process alone can make you want to like run out into traffic. So having fewer choices and having them all be things that everyone is mostly okay with, then should we play Sorry, or should we play Yahtzee, or should we play a card game, is such an easier decision. So, but there's something about just having them out easily accessible and visual that just, I feel like, would make kids gravitate toward them. So I'm going to take your tip on this one as well. Ours are pretty well organized and pared down right now, but they are still in a closet and the kids need help reaching some of them. So I'm going to try this of having just a few easily accessible. I love that idea.
Yeah, it just makes it that much easier.
Okay, so
should I take this last
one? Yeah, because this is a good one.
Okay, so tip number 7, the last one, is throw the game. When Owen and I started playing Monopoly together, he was 5 years old, and he somehow won every other game because I let him win. So yes, the strategy gave him a little boost of confidence, but it encouraged him to keep playing, but also made the games so much shorter, which made it that much easier for me to play. So yeah. Again, I'm not like advocating you always let kids win, especially when there's other kids involved and they're like, why is, you know, they're not likely to allow that to happen. But
right,
if you're doing more one-on-one or with another older sibling who really doesn't care.
Right.
Or with a younger sibling, you know, there's a way I've had before where I'm like, oh my gosh, you both won.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Wow.
I didn't even think that was possible. I think that just being willing to like just know, especially if it's something like checkers or Chinese checkers, like those are really easy games to just let the other, let the kid win. You're going to get it done faster. Everyone's happy and you can kind of like feel good about the fact that you played the game and then moved on. I don't know. I feel like this is,
it's not bad advice, and I'm here with research to back you up. So
that's, good.
Yeah.
All right.
So, first of all, it's really common, I think, to have the reaction like, oh no, we're not supposed to let our kids win because they need to learn how to lose graciously. So yes, kids need to learn how to lose graciously. And that doesn't happen when you're 3, 4, or 5 years old. And it doesn't happen by always losing. Think how you would feel if you always lost. That's really not a good strategy for losing gracefully, because it's just demoralizing. So, I read a book a couple years ago called Playful Parenting, which is by Lawrence Cohen, and I'll link to it in the show notes. And the book is about all kinds of things and really more about how much of parenting we can sort of like turn into make-believe and play with our kids and how good that is for them developmentally, yada, yada. But he talks at length about why it's okay to let kids win. And in particular with kids who are, I'm going to say like 3, 4, 5, 6, even 7 years old, when life is kind of hard, they are feeling small and out of control. Mm-hmm. And like, they don't win at a lot of stuff when you're a little kid, and how purposely letting them win at certain times. And this doesn't mean always forever. If you're still letting your 8-year-old, who's a, you know, competent, well-adjusted 8-year-old, beat you every time, then probably it's time to shift gears. But with those little kids who, you know, really often are struggling with just being a kid, letting them win, and not only letting them win, but really kind of like playing into it, like, oh my gosh, you keep getting the best cards. Like, how is this happening? Kind of playing into this, like the bumbling loser. Right, like, wow. Yeah, like, yeah. Can be a huge confidence booster for kids. And the better they feel, the more likely they are to continue to want to play. And little by little by little, you can win. You can let them win less. You can, over time, kind of wean them off that. And what I love is that you kind of summed it up in this post without having read that book or done that research. But you were doing the same thing. You realized Owen needed to win. It was in your best interest to keep him happy. And I guarantee you don't let Owen win games now that he's 11.
Oh, no. And now he's good enough. He doesn't need me to help him.
Exactly.
And he can win on his own. And, you know, also kids need to learn how to be good winners.
Yes.
Graceful winners.
Yes.
That's just as important as learning how to be a graceful loser. And so if they never win, like you said, first of all, that's so demoralizing, but then they never get a chance to know what does it feel like to be win. What are the feelings of the other person? Like having that empathy.
Right.
Imagine if they lost, and finally started winning at like age 8 or 9 because they finally had the skills.
Right.
And we're just like evilly triumphant.
Yes.
Because they've been waiting.
They've been beaten down.
Yes, exactly. That doesn't seem healthy either. So that approach has always worked for us and has not backfired in any way. So I'm really glad that research backs up.
It does. Well, the other thing I love about this being the final tip is I feel like if you've done some of the other things we've talked about, teaming up with older siblings, modifying the rules, playing in small batches or setting time limits, a lot of that would make for less of this need to have like a big winner and a big loser, because we've talked about it. If you're teamed up, you at least have a buddy that you're either winning or losing with. And this losing graciously and winning graciously is being modeled, and you're adjusting the rules so it's not so biased against the little kids. So I almost feel like this need to throw the game and let the littlest win is actually, it's less of a need if we're also doing all of these other things in conjunction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really true. Yeah. And I would say that the throwing the game was almost exclusively when it was just me and just me playing with the kid.
Yes.
Because that was when it was way more unevenly matched. It's like, I'm 35 and I'm playing with a 4-year-old. Well, who do you think is going to win every 100% of the time if I don't start throwing the game?
So, you know, what's one more thing I want to mention on throwing the game is there's a difference between throwing the game and letting a kid cheat or circumvent the rules. And we talked about modifying the rules at the start. That's different than I have one or two kids who likes to suggest that we modify the rules in the middle of the game when it's to their advantage. And I actually think that letting them win and making those modifications ahead of time, then you can be pretty strict about, like, I'm not going to play if you're going to change the rules in the middle of the game. That's not fair.
Yep.
But if you've done all these other things, then hopefully they don't feel like they need to do that. Does that make sense? So that's, those are two very different things. I would be pretty strict about having my kids stick to the rules that we've agreed with. And actually, I think in this book, he actually recommends that you can ask your kid at the beginning of the game, what are the rules? Tell me the rules to this game. What happens if you draw this card? And get them to buy in on the rules, and then you make them stick to it, because that's different. Playing fair is different than letting them win. I think there's a difference there.
Yeah, so. And the letting them win thing doesn't really work unless they believe they won either from their own skill or their own luck.
Right.
They know they like cheated to win.
Right.
That does not serve the purpose.
Nobody's been helped. And that's why I think that with little kids, especially playing it up like, oh my gosh, you're so good at this. Like just play it up and let them feel good. Awesome. Well, we're going to take a quick break, couple little housekeeping things, and then let's move on and talk a little bit about how we organize board games in our house and some of our favorite ones.
Sure.
I'm excited for that. So will you remind people about the course that you've got going on?
I will. So I have a course that I am teaching starting in September, a virtual course, an e-course, if you will, called Mothers of Reinvention Foundations. And basically that came out of a survey I sent out a little while ago, asking listeners to let me know kind of what they're struggling with, where they could use help, maybe making space in their lives for adding in their own stuff, their own passions and hobbies and things that they want to work on. And so a couple things came up with almost all of you who responded. It was great, the response that we got for that. Thank you, by the way.
Yeah.
But people really, the moms really wanted a chance to focus on their physical health, their time management, their family life, to kind of help them find more confidence as a mom and help them juggle everything. And so I decided to put this course together as a precursor to a class that will come later down the road where it will focus more on work and maybe starting a business or a creative hobby. But this one is really more foundational. This is like, I have to get all these pieces together first of my life and then make space for this next thing. And so It'll be a 10-week course. It's going to be really heavily based on Facebook Live videos and audio content. So that would be delivered to you not through the podcast, but, you know, through like privately. It'll be exclusive audio content. Plus, there's going to be journaling prompts every week and an activity every week that you can work through with this community of people who are going to be going through this process with you.
That's great.
So the class, again, starts in September, but I'm running an early bird special on it right now. The usual cost will be $89. And until August 1st, which is coming up soon, it's $79. So if you want to get to the page, you can go to the show notes for this episode 112, and there's a link in there. I think it's also in 111. And if you forget the episode number, just go.
Yeah, and our social media, we've been sharing it on social as well. So links everywhere.
Exactly. So you'll find it. But again, that early bird rate will only go through August the 1st. So get on that now, because I'm really thinking this class is going to be very popular.
I think it's going to fill up. I just did the math, like the really difficult math of like, if it's $80 at the early bird rate and it's 10 weeks, that's $8 a week. $8 a week to have somebody keeping you inspired, keeping you accountable to kind of outlining your goals and how you want your life to look as a mom. I mean, that's like, that's like nothing. That's like way less than your Starbucks or your,
That's it's so much less than your Starbucks. Thank you for that. That is basically the point of this class, is to help you figure out how to create a life you love that suits, you know, your style, your personality, and also helps you find time to do what really matters to you. So I'm really excited. So again, check it out, Mothers of Reinvention Foundations, and you can find it in the show notes for this
episode, are at themomhour.com. Well, I wanted to shout out to iTunes, or I should say Apple Podcasts, an Apple Podcast review that we just got this week, and also remind people how to do that because it helps us so much. So Lakewood Mama just gave us a review this week, and here's what it says. She says, as a mom with young kiddos, it's so great to gain perspective from moms who've been there. I love that Megan and Sarah are real and down to earth, and I truly appreciate their openness and candidness. I've been binge listening since I discovered them. Thank you, Lakewood Mama. Thank you, everybody who has left us reviews, not just Apple Podcasts, although that seems to be the most effective and the most popular. But if you are a diehard Stitcher or other program user, those also allow you to rate and review, and we appreciate those as well. We have a little tutorial on our site that I'll link to in the show notes if you've never left a review. Take an afternoon or an hour if you're an avid podcast listener, and take some time and write reviews for all the shows you love. I've done that before, where I've sat down and like batch reviewed other podcasters that I love. It makes everybody's day. It helps other listeners find the show. And it sounds like a little superficial thing, and I promise it's not. It actually matters, and we so appreciate it. So wanted to read that one and thank everybody who has left us a review. I also think it's so funny. People are still, we have actually a lot of brand new listeners lately, and people are still going back and binge listening, which I feel like now that sounds like a full-time job to me, because we have 112 episodes.
I know.
Like, I hope you have a really long car ride. Yes. Yeah. So we really have like 130. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in case you're driving across the country.
That is impressive.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to just spend another few minutes or so on the topic of games. I thought I would share how we've been organizing our games in this house. I know every house and storage is different, but it's a little different than just a cupboard full of boxes. So I'll start with that. Because I'm in Southern California, we don't really need a coat closet, but all houses have them. You have an entry closet, you know, in your house. So we use that for mostly just board game storage, and also my printer is in that closet on top of kind of a tower storage thing. But I was getting tired. There's not a lot of shelving in there, and I was getting tired of the boxes that get all dilapidated, and like, you know, the top of the board game box is like the seams, the corners start to flatten out. And a lot of times there's a lot of wasted space inside. Like there's a little plastic caddy, but you never put the things back in the holes where they're supposed to go. So because
I interrupt you really quick and say that I don't want to be like the grumpy old lady, like shaking my stick, but they do not make those board game boxes like they used to. They feel like they're made of like the cheapest possible cardboard now. So it's like they just disintegrate.
I know what you mean, because we have a couple old ones and they are more sturdy. That's so true.
Yeah.
Kids these days. Okay. So hear me out. I haven't gotten rid of all the boxes, but I have gotten rid of a lot, and I completely get rid of the box. I recycle it, throw it away. Because this is a coat closet, it has a hanger rack. So I use coat hangers and Ziploc bags for all of the small pieces. So let's say Candyland is a pretty simple example. Candyland has 4 game pieces and the cards themselves. So those are in like a quart size Ziploc bag, which is poked a hole through it over a coat hanger. So the pieces and the cards hang on a coat hanger. And then all I have left is the board, which we have this like a mesh tower storage thing with drawers. And so now the board has, I used my label maker. So it says Candyland on the outside. So you can easily see which board, which folded up game board it is. And it's in a separate place, but it's so minimal because it's so flat. Does that make sense? So you have your bulky stuff hanging from the coat hangers and you have your game boards all just stacked in a row. So when you want to play a game, you get the board and then you get the pieces and you put them back. So it's a little different.
That actually, okay. So I have to say, I have this weird thing where I feel like obligated to hang onto the boxes, but you're right. It makes total sense to not, because all the things I said about how they're not well made anymore, most for the most part. And then what you said about like, you know, they fall apart. They like look terrible. Yeah. They don't stack. They start and to like cave in.
So there's like wasted space. Anymore. So unless you have unlimited shelving, and this particular closet only has one shelf, you know, like the high shelf where in a coat closet. So that's all it has. And the rest is open space. So we have this kind of drawer tower thing. But the board boxes don't fit, or the game boxes don't fit very well in these drawers either. So I ditched most of the boxes. The nice thing about the coat hangers is you can see in the Ziploc bags, which of the game pieces are there, and it's all there. So if the game is Life, which we're going to get to because I hate the game of Life, but that has a bunch of random stuff. It has the money, it has the cars, it has like the weird spinner, but it's all in a Ziploc bag. And then you just grab the board and you grab your stuff and away you go. So it's not all of our, I'll try and take a picture of this for the show notes. It's not every single game, but it is really cut down on the number of boxes we have. And there's no love lost with getting rid of those boxes for me. So
that's pretty genius. And I think I might have to steal that idea.
I don't know. You actually need coats for your closets. That's the problem. Your coat true. Closet has coats in it. Do you have any? I know we talked about just paring down and rotating which games are out. Do you have any other sort of organizing tips to add there?
No, that was basically my only tip. So now I'm just going to have to steal your idea and then I'll be organized.
Yeah, but yours is pretty good. I mean, having fewer games, just like toys, getting rid of the ones, just be Marie Kondo and just part with them. Just thank them for their service and let them go if they're ones that you don't like or that are incomplete.
Yeah.
Or
that we're just not into right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
You know, put them away, but they don't have to be out all the time.
Right. Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, so now we thought we would go through a few recommendations of our favorite games. Probably not a completely exhaustive list because there's a bunch and a bunch are good for different ages, but I'll just fire off some that are top of mind for me right now. And then what we thought would be fun is at the show notes at themomhour.com, if you go to episode 112, we will put together a little guide and I'll even organize it by age. So if you're in the market for board games, we will link to a bunch of our favorite. So, okay. So here's mine. Sorry, I mentioned earlier. Sorry is a game that I grew up playing, and there is a new version out. It has a few twists or new bells and whistles. There's like an ice and fire thing that happens that gives it a little more strategy. I will say, even though I'm a purist and normally I would resist, it's actually pretty fun to play with the new rules. You can also find classic Sorry. I've seen both. So you don't have to be able to read. I feel like my 4.5-year-old can play Sorry, and that's a good one. Apples to Apples, we have had a lot of fun with. We have the junior edition, but just like you were saying, Megan, earlier in the episode about how you don't always need the junior edition, just recently we've been having the older kids play the regular Apples to Apples. It's just a lot funnier. Apples to Apples is subjective. You know, you're choosing what the kind of funniest or best combination of words is. And we just found that the junior version, we weren't laughing as much. You didn't have the opportunities for irony and just funny pairings. So the only downside is a lot of times there's celebrity mentions that my kids do not know who they are, but they just skip those. So there's also another similar game to Apples called Pickwits that we got as a gift. And it's like the same idea where you're pairing a concept with another concept. And sometimes it's a funny or ironic pairing, but it's with pictures. So you don't have to read for that one. Guess Who is a great game for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds. I love Guess Who. That's one that I will always sit down. It's only two players, so that's a downside. And we've had a couple different versions that fall apart or that have like these plastic parts that kind of can get loose. So I think depending on the version you get, some of them hold up better than others, but I think it's a great game. We've talked about Candyland, Uno, Boggle. We are classic card games people in my family. Like my dad grew up like poker playing and blackjack and rummy, gin, cribbage. Like we are like old men in that regard. Now, some of those are a little above my kids' skill level, but they're still games that we'll continue to play as adults and teach our kids. So both Allegra and Reed have started to learn cribbage, which is one of my favorite games of all time. And so sometimes all you need is a deck of cards, or in the case of cribbage, it's a little game board, but we love card games. Go Fish and Old Maid are always good options. I think you can play those with a big group, even if it's not all just little kids. And then you mentioned Memory. I think Memory is a fun one. And that is another one that I think has some modifications, like where little kids could feel like they're playing, but just their memory's not as good. Right. But like if they get a turn to flip over the tiles, they're still at least playing. So I think that's another one. And then the last one I wanted to mention is Catchphrase. There's a way to play Catchphrase like where you buy the game, but there's actually an iPhone app that we do all the time on vacation. So Catchphrase is where you have a partner or team members sitting in a circle and you're trying to get them to guess the word that you're looking at without saying that word. So it's really simple, but it moves really fast. And when the buzzer goes off, you don't want to be caught holding the Catchphrase thing. In this case, it's just an iPhone. It works perfectly on the iPhone, and we've played with all ages. So that is an app called Phrase Party, and it is a paid app, but it's been totally worth it. It's like $4, and we've used it so much. And yeah, I've used it in groups of adults with the kids. You can do it with maybe 4 people would be the minimum, but then up to big groups. So that's a fun one. So that's what I got, and I will link to all of those in the show notes. Yeah,
those are some good ones, and some that I didn't actually know about. I don't think that I knew Catchphrase. I didn't never heard of Pickwits.
Yeah, that is a newfangled one, but it's been fun.
Okay, well, my list has got some of the same as yours. So of course we're big Settlers of Catan. I also love classic card games, and I love that you mentioned like all you need is a deck of cards. Like there's endless games you can play with just a dollar deck of cards.
Yep.
Which I love that it just has endless opportunities and options for like traveling, and when you're going someplace and really all you want to bring is a deck of cards. Or if you forget to bring anything with you on a trip, you can always find a deck of cards at the gas station or anywhere. So that's just like so versatile. I also love everything in the Uno family. So like Skip-Bo, Phase 10, Uno, there's like a bunch of offshoot games, and they're all different, but they all are like similar enough and the cards kind of look familiar. So it's like it doesn't take you as long. I take forever to learn new games. And for some reason, anything in that sort of Uno family, I feel like it doesn't take me as long to learn. Scrabble is a big one for me. Yahtzee, it travels really, really well. I mean, all you have is like a little cup, some dice, and then the Yahtzee papers that can be done almost anywhere. And they probably even have like a travel version of it. I haven't bothered because I've found that that regular Yahtzee is fine. You can play it right inside the box.
Yes.
Which is good if you're like camping or something where the dice can scatter. I personally love Monopoly and Life.
No.
No. I know Sarah doesn't. You know what? For me, Monopoly and Life are like long. It's kind of like the difference between sitting down with an article from The Atlantic versus like reading, someone's Facebook post. Like it's long form game playing. And I have to be in the mood for it for sure. Unless I really crazily alter the rules to make the game a lot shorter. I really have to be ready to sit down for a long time. And I know that's not your bag, Sarah, but I do like both of those. And I found them, Life has gotten updated. What I loved about Life when I was little is it felt like I could be anything. Like it was just my life. And like, I could be all creative. And the thing is, you really can't be. Like at some point the game kind of decides for you whether you're going to end up in the poorhouse or not. But I don't know. I still like, I think it for me, some of it's nostalgia.
Okay.
And I'm ending with Chinese checkers. Like I love Chinese checkers. It's so simple. You can buy it and you can buy a version at the dollar store if you're on vacation and you forgot yours. You can use a nice one at home. You can have it sitting out. Kind of looks pretty. You can get like the those really nice wooden boards and it looks pretty, and you can just have it sitting right out on your table. And just, it's like one of those where you can just impromptu grab it and up to 6 people can play all at the same time, or 2 people can play, and almost any kid with some guidance can learn how to play it. So that's one of those that I just love. It's like a go-to for me. Well, so that is, I mean, I could go on, but
yeah, no, I want to talk about Chinese checkers for a second because I kind of forgot about that. Does it look like, is it where the board is like wooden and there's little marbles? Is it like in the shape of a star? Am I picturing that correctly?
Yeah. Yep. Sometimes it's marbles, sometimes it's little pegs, but it's like the shape of a star and there you move the object is to move all of your, I want to say like 12, like your little pyramid of marbles to your opponent's empty marbles as they move. So the empty spaces that they leave, you move into theirs and they move into yours.
Okay.
The object is to just get all of your little pegs or marbles into theirs and them to get into yours. So whoever gets there first wins. And the game can go quite quickly. Sometimes if you've got like six playing people playing, it takes forever and it gets very complicated and fun. But I really like it.
Yeah, that is going to be
simple.
That's going to be on my list because I'd forgotten about that one. It's fun when we talk through these, like in your own mind, it's like, well, these are all obvious games, but that one wasn't to me. And I would like to get that one. That's going to be on my list. I also wanted to add about Yahtzee because I love Yahtzee. And going back to my game organizing tip, that is one where, yes, you can definitely play in the box and that's a good advantage of the box. But the box also, you don't need that much space. Like you said, it's the cup and the dice. And we have also found you can Google the score sheets if you run out or if you're on the road. And if you have a printer or print before you go, you can print more score sheets. So we've done that before with Yahtzee too. Yahtzee is another one where you could modify. You can play just the top half if you want. Like it can get long and complicated with all the math. And so love Yahtzee. Okay, so maybe is it even worth mentioning games we don't love? I'm going to say a few that I can just admit that I don't love. And two of those are Life and Monopoly. It's not that I don't love the long form because I've gotten into Catan since we took the time to learn that. That was really fun. I don't know. I didn't play Life growing up, so I don't have the nostalgia factor. It's more that my kids want to play those games, and I don't have the long-form ability right now to sit down and play those. So right. It might be more of a situational thing. Monopoly, I've never really loved. I never got enough out of it to make it worth the time it took to play for me. Another little kid game that I don't love is Chutes and Ladders, and it seems similar. It seems similar to like Candyland or those others, but I by far prefer Candyland.
It's even more pointless.
It's pointless, and more specifically, kids have to count, and kids are really bad. Oh. Kindergarten teachers will tell you this. Kids don't get one-to-one correlation, or there's a name for it in learning. It's one-to-one where they're able to go one, two, three, and actually move their piece on each square one at a time. And then, you know how in Chutes and Ladders, the numbers are, they zigzag up the board. So I feel like kids are always going the wrong direction and not counting correctly. And now I'm sounding just really controlling about it. Candyland at least is colors. It's like, even a three-year-old can go two reds. But to go to space 72 and have to, or no, to go like six spaces and have to go in the right direction on Chutes and Ladders is too hard for the kids that game is supposed to be fun for, in my opinion. And then my last one is anything with weird equipment. So we have a couple of, and these are usually kind of games that are not classic board games, but we have like that pie face game that will spray you in the face with whipped cream, and it has like this weird little like
terrible.
Yeah, it is terrible. And we have another one that has this like large awkward electronic thing, basically like I want my game in a box or something I can take out of a box and put in a bag. So large bulky equipment is off the list for me.
And those games I feel like are flashes in the pan, generally speaking.
Yes.
You know, they don't stick around. So
Twister though. Twister almost has weird equipment. Do your kids ever play Twister? Did you ever get out the Twister mat? Oh yeah.
I have not owned Twister I've never owned Twister. I kind of just feel like it's the kind of game my mom would have been slightly disapproving of for no real reason. So I don't have a lot of history with Twister. I don't have any like, I don't know, nostalgia about it.
Yeah.
But it is, and I've never bought it.
Yeah. So. We don't have it. We used to, but I got rid of it.
And it can be fun. Like, I've played it before at a party where I had a good time, but it's never occurred to me to own it. So,
yeah.
Okay, so I don't really have any specific games I can think of off the top of my head that I hate, except for I don't like Candyland and I don't like Chutes and Ladders. I think that just goes along with my why are we even doing this thing. Like what is the point? Like all we're doing is going from here to there and like in between, what's the point? And so I've never liked those. But for me, I'm finding that I have a lot of resistance to new games that come out, even the ones that people love. So like people keep talking about, for example, Ticket to Ride. And I actually got it for my kids for Christmas. And I am terrible, terrible at reading and absorbing and comprehending game, like board game rules.
Yeah.
I really have a hard time. Like it takes me, I sometimes feel like something's wrong with me because I'll read through it and then I'll read through it again. It's like reading a recipe, like a really complicated recipe. Right. I get to the end and I've already forgotten the first step. I'm often like going, but why? And I always want to know the why to any game. And also be like, but why are we doing this? Like, what is the point? Just show me, like, tell me what the point is. And then maybe let me watch two rounds of play. What ends up happening with some of these games I'm finding is that you don't figure out the routine in the first round. It's not like what you do on this roll or the next roll. It's like everything adds on to the last. I don't know. My brain for that is just so not functional so I find myself unfairly, I guess, like writing off new games.
And right.
That Ticket to Ride isn't the only one. I've bought other ones where I was like, I just don't get it. I don't know. So if anyone has played those games and can convince me that even my weak little puny brain can absorb it and learn how to play it without, you know, too much work, I'll give it another shot. But right now I'm like, guys, can we just play like Yahtzee?
Yeah.
I already know how to play Yahtzee.
I hear you. I hear you on that. I'm probably the opposite. I like to read and follow the instructions as they are written. But I also think there's plenty of classic games that doesn't always need to be. And so I think I have a general suspicion of new games as well. Would love to hear from listeners if they have game recommendations that are new. I have one more that I forgot to mention that is a great all-family game. And I mean big groups. It's a dice game, and it's called Left, Center, Right. Have you heard of this, Megan?
No.
Okay, so literally there's three dice, and on the dice are either L's, L for left, C for center, R for right, and it determines where you pass your money. And we've played with real money, or you can play with chips, and it moves really fast. There's no strategy. It's all luck. It's all dice rolling, and somebody at the end gets a big pile of whatever, chips, fake money, real money.
Cool.
And so it's a really great like vacation game if you have, and it travels in a tin the size of a deck of cards because it's three dice, and that's it. And then if you want to use, you know, chips or something to count your money. So that's another good one that I will link to. It's cool. Cheap, portable, great for all ages. So, well, this has been really fun.
It is. And you know what? Before we wrap, I just want to say that I was just talking to, I think, my sister recently about what a hard job it would be to create board games. Like, really how complicated it can be sometimes to, like, figure out the strategy and how the point systems work and all of those things. So I just have to have a shout. Like, I'm sure there's no board game designers listening to us right now, but if you're out there, I really respect the work, because it's like a good board game is a piece of art. It is not an easy thing to pull off.
Nope.
Maybe I've known, because I've tried to like make up rules before and it doesn't always
Yeah,
go
and
well,
the good so, ones, there are a lot yeah. of bad, there are a lot of poorly designed games out there, I think, is that's been a theme in this yeah. episode, is the classics are classics for a reason. And games that are well designed, that appeal to lots of different types of people, are good finds. So I also want to say yes. that if you are in the phase where you think it's supposed to be fun to play board games with your kids and it's not fun yet, please see our episode 110, also known as our episode, I don't know, 10, which is called We Hate Fun. Like, we've been there. We have been there when it is, yeah. you think it's supposed to be fun and heartwarming to play games with your kids. And if your kids are 2, 4, and 6, that's just not going to be that fun. So look nope. ahead nope. to the future. And hopefully we've offered some tips for, you know, incorporating games when you do have really little kids, but also just be patient. That's our general yes. theme, is it will get better. And I am actually having fun playing games with my kids for the most part, as long as it's not life.
Love it.
Epic life.
love
okay.
that.
So Warby Parker is our sponsor today. Your at-home try-on, 5 pairs of glasses, no obligation to buy, ships free. You get that at warbyparker.com/themomhour, all lowercase. Definitely go check that out. And everything we talked about will be in the show notes at episode 112, themomhour.com.
Love it. Thanks, all.